prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cedarstrom. I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. And today is Thursday, June 8th, 2023. Hi, Dave.
Hey, Melody. Happy Best Friends Day.
Aww, it is?
Yes. Aww. June 8th honors our closest and dearest friends. The relationship between best friends is often fierce, as we know, withstanding distance, and storms, and occasional silence. However long or short we've known each other, best friends make tough times bearable, fun times memorable, and memorable times priceless. According to a Pew Research poll, 98% of teens have one or more close friends. 78% say they have one to five close friends. However, as we move into adulthood, our friendship-making ability changes along with our priorities. Indeed, as singer-songwriter Billy Joel once wrote, some people are in and out of our lives. Some will last. Some will just be now and then. Well, I'm blessed that I can count on no less than six or seven inner circle pals, I call them, to make me laugh, be a good shoulder and advisor, and just to be a lunch and dinner companion who I can basically call anytime and talk about anything on my mind. I've known the best of my best friends since seventh grade, over five decades ago. We were college roommates.
You're how old?
I know.
You're how old?
I breached that 39 barrier recently.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yes, my bestie and I were college roommates, fraternity brothers, and best man in each other's weddings. So, look, no matter how many friends surround you, get together or call them now to celebrate the day.
Ooh-hoo, please do. 1-800-375-4188. We're your friend with gold and silver, so.
Indeed.
And then gold and silver had a pretty nice day today. Gold is up 1.25%, $25, $19.65. Silver was up 3.5% at $24.34. White metals were down. Platinum was down 8, and palladium was down $31. And the reflection to the opposite side of the coin on the gold is the USDX that was down 0.77 at 103.34. Crude oil also took a hit today, $1.50 at 70.99. So we'll just round it out to 71. And the paper markets today, the Dow rises more than 160 points. And the S&P 500 hits a new closing high for this year, 26 points at 4,293. The NASDAQ was up 1% at 13,238. The European markets, the FTSE was negative just by 25 points. Asian markets, the Hang Seng and the Shanghai were higher. But none of the Asian markets really did anything too exciting. The 10-year yield, 3.71. Natural gas today was up again, about a quarter of a percent, 2.33. And, you know, I know some of the talk, Dave, I'm sure we're going to talk about it, Dave, is the shortage of housing. And it's hitting some people in areas harder than others. And of course, they've said that's the only place that we're having a recession is in the housing, the property market. That's the only place. Yeah. Everything else is going along just swimmingly. But so again, just these little signs like that certainly puts a lot of pressure on. And I saw somebody's comment today, and then we're going to head right on into some of the reports today, especially about the Eurozone entering the recession, is this is very similar to prior to 2008. I mean, we talked about 2008 for what, 2 years? 2006, 2007, where there was a lot of naysayers out there saying nothing was going to happen, that everything was just dandy. But yeah, we knew about the adjustable rate mortgages. We knew that was going to happen. We knew about the subprime mortgages. We knew all of this was going to happen. We talked about it on a daily basis. You have people out there claiming that they were the ones that were able to, you know, pinpoint the crash that was coming in 2000, you know, and actually I think, you know, But everybody was saying how great things were, that there was no problems, that, you know, everything's going along swimmingly and everything's going to be fine. But that wasn't the case. So I understand to a point that they have to do that to prevent any panics, because the panic came soon enough. And that panic would have been probably 50% worse if, you know, people were pre-warned about it. But isn't that sad, though, that people aren't warned, that they can't do anything to protect their money? And so you have to be vigilant with your own money and do what you need to do to protect it, because your financial planners, and, you know, they'll say, oh, well, we'll get you gold. They'll get you paper gold most of the time. They'll get you paper, they'll get you shares, gold shares. That's not owning gold. ETFs, gold ETFs, that's not gold. It's paper. So, again, take control, be your own boss, and because you all know more than probably most financial planners out there do. So the Eurozone, Dave, entered into a recession in the first quarter this year. No one seems to be very optimistic for the coming months, as a lot of economists here in the States are not optimistic, but, you know, they don't really say too much about it. The GDP of negative 0.1% for the first 3 months of the year. These were all according to revised estimates from the region's statistics office, Eurostat. Now, in its first reading a month ago, the agency had said the Eurozone grew by 0.1% over the first 3 months of the year. Oh, my, oh, my. The pronouncement was adjusted down, of course, and our government has 3 shots to adjust the GDP and growth numbers. But Ireland also made a downward revision to its growth rate, not showing a contraction of almost, or now showing a contraction of almost 5%. Germany also cut its growth figures for the same period. Before the weak performance over January to March, the Eurozone also contracted by 0.1% in the fourth quarter. of last year. So you're looking at two consecutive quarters of negative GDP performance. Hey, what do you got there, Dave? I think we call it a recession.
Now they're saying they're saying in quotes, technical recession.
Oh. Okay, but truly not a recession.
Yeah, well, time will tell. European inflation still way higher than the European Central Bank certainly wants to see it. I mean, it's down from double digits last year, but it's still higher than it's been reported here in the U.S. Now, interestingly, household consumption did drop by 0.3% in the eurozone, sort of indicating that some consumers are succumbing to higher prices. I love that name, Klaus Vistensen of Pantheon Macroeconomics says that the Eurozone region is unlikely to see much growth in the months ahead as well, when he expects a slowdown in investment. It's also going to pose a challenge for the ECB. It's been on a hawkish path for the last year, and most recently increased its main rate at 3.25%. The ECB, like our Fed, is going to meet next week. Market players in Europe have priced in another 25 basis point hike, a little bit different than what majority of futures traders here in the U.S. Are predicting the Fed will do, but more on that later.
Okay. Well, today is Thursday. Yes, I said it earlier in the program, and now it's jobless claims Thursday. And it's interesting, though, for the first time, jobless claims rose sharply last week. And again, it could be a sign that shows that the labor market could be softening. Hello. After all these rate hikes, initial filings for unemployment benefits totaled a seasonally adjusted 261,000 for the week ending June 3rd. This is an increase of 28,000 from the upwardly revised level just a week before. Now, the total was well ahead of economists' estimate of 235,000. And now this was actually the highest weekly rate since October 2021. That weekly jump pushed up the four-week moving average of claims by 7,500, and this is the highest since April the 29th. Now, we all know that these continuing claims, they actually run a week behind the headline number, as it measures those who have filed for multiple weeks. Now, that fell by 37,000 to 1.76 million. But, you know, the Labor Department didn't come out and cite any specific factor for the increase. 1.64 million people were receiving jobless benefits through May 20th. That's up about 360,000 from 1.28, and that's just from a year ago. So, and again, that's an increase of 27%. So, you know, it doesn't really make sense that you can have that type of an increase, but yet we have all of these low numbers in the employment anyway. But, hey, one and one doesn't seem to be adding up to two, Dave.
No. And again, this latest report comes less than a week ahead of next week's Federal Open Market Committee meeting. That's when policymakers will decide their next move. As I alluded to, the chances of no increase rose to 74% following the jobless claims release this morning, from about 65% before the release. That's according to the CME group. You know, again, the less robust labor market reduces pressure on the Fed to tighten monetary policy, as the increase of employment and wages has been a factor in high inflation. We'll see what's going to happen. I think there will be a one-month pause myself. But again, who knows? The Fed has been obsessed with getting rates down. They've been impatient. They've been persistent. I think a one-month pause might give them just a little bit of time to just sit back and let some of these lagged effects kick in. So in any event, Fed's going to get its last look at inflation data ahead of next Wednesday's rate decision. The Bureau of Labor Statistics releases the CPI report for May on Tuesday. It's expected by economists to rise just a measly 0.1% month over month.
You know, it's pretty easy to figure it out. I agree with you. I think they'll put a hold on it because the markets are going fine. I really don't think they really, you know, to some degree, government likes and, you know, needs inflation, likes inflation. And as long as everything seems to be moving along and the markets, the paper markets are not impacted and they seem to be doing just fine, you know, where the S&P, they're not going to touch it.
Mm-hmm.
Or the other way to look at this is maybe because these markets are higher, maybe they will do it again. So if they were negative, if the markets were dropping, that's pretty close and to be sure that they wouldn't increase. So
I think.
So and my question is, does it even really matter whether they do or whether they don't? I don't think it does. I think the damage has been done. If they do increase it more, it's, you know, it's just going to add more, you know, it's going to add more conflict or more disruptive in the markets and behind the scenes. But people don't have a tendency to look behind the scenes to see what's going on. So I don't know. So we have Chinese banks. They cut their rates for their savers. Yeah, they're trying to boost their economy. And their consumption has been pretty slow to recover from all their COVID lockdowns. The country's six state-owned commercial banks all showed updated yuan-denominated demand deposit interest rates of 0.2%, down from 0.25% last year. Demand deposits allow withdrawals at any time. So you have the bank cut rates for other deposit products, including reducing the interest rate for five-year time deposits to 2.5 from 2.65. And that's not a whole big cut, Dave. I mean, you know, I guess it depends, of course, but it doesn't seem like a big cut.
Oh, I think they're viewing it more as a surprising trend, is how I'm looking at it. And I don't know. We'll see more next week when their new interest rate is due out. So, go ahead.
Well, we're moving on to Canada wildfire smoke. We talked about this yesterday. And, you know, seeing the pictures of New York City, and I don't know if it's like this around you in Philadelphia, where you're at, but pictures of Philly, Harrisburg, you're looking at red air. The pictures are amazing. We've had flight delays. You know, they postponed a lot of Major League Baseball games. Telling people to stay indoors, and if you do go outside, you should wear a mask. And I heard too that the particulates are so small, the particles are so small that you have to wear the 95 mask. Air quality alerts are in effect in the Northeast and Midwest, and it could also go into tomorrow. I don't know, unless those fires. I don't know why they would expect the smoke to dissipate if the fires are still going strong, except the jet stream moves and it goes in a different direction. But that wouldn't mean that the smoke is dissipating, would it?
Moving up in the atmosphere.
Yeah.
What's that?
Oh, I hear the music. I guess he almost sounds like he's breathing in that air. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen. And 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you give Discount Gold and Silver Trading a call for all your gold and silver coin needs, and then visit our website at dgscoins.com. dgscoins.com. And I don't know if there's anything else we wanted to talk about the smoky air.
Well, I think just to bring closure to it, the impact on particularly air flights is pretty impactful. Late morning today, 1,300 flights to and from and within the U.S. Were delayed. 68 departures from LaGuardia in New York, which is 12% of their schedule, were delayed as of really around lunchtime. 56 nearby Newark. That's 8% of their schedule. Philadelphia International, about an hour away from where I live, the FAA briefly halted inbound flights earlier today. I read or heard on the news, that they've since resumed. But yeah, it's pretty amazing. Timing's everything. I'm glad. Not that you're happy that something like this ever happens, but my wife and I were in Boston just 2 weeks ago at our nephew's wedding. Glad we weren't inundated at that point, right?
You know, it's interesting, too, because I think you were in Puerto Rico, and I saw a brief headline about how hot. I mean, they're having temperatures never before. They're as hot as, like, in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw mid-90s, high 90s. It's very, I mean, you know, it's...
She usually doesn't get there to like, you know, I mean, I've been there too when it's been really hot, but they have a lot of humidity, so I can't even imagine what the index would be, but probably like 110, their temperatures are in the 90s with that humidity. So, yeah, so it'll be interesting as we see hurricane season begin. How those warm temperatures and so forth and everything else that's... is involved in that. Yeah. HSBC Bank, they're pulling their mortgages. Yeah. Of course, they're too big to fail. HSBC Bank, they pulled all of its UK mortgages because of significant demand as borrowers rush to secure the best deals among soaring rates. HSBC said earlier this afternoon that it would take all residential, buy-to-lease, and business mortgage deals off the market in order to maintain its service levels. And they're going to relaunch them on Monday, of course, with higher rates. Yeah, you can't have these low rates. We got to adjust them, and it's going to take us till Monday to do this, so you're out. The bank's going to increase its standard variable rate for the buy-to-let customers from 7.1 to 7.35, and but there are no plans to increase its residential standard variable rate, which is holding just at 6.99, so 7%. And this comes 4 months after HSBC launched its five-year fixed-rate mortgage with a rate of 3.99. Now, it was the first loan on the market with a lower rate than the Bank of England's base rate since last September, Dave.
Yeah, I mean, stubborn inflation, which last month came in higher than expected at 8.7%. Is driving fears that interest rates are going to rise above the current Bank of England rate of 4.5%. In fact, mortgage deals have dropped by 12%. The bank's repricing their rates to reflect market expectations that interest rates will, in fact, hit 5.5% by the end of the year. It's part of the inflation-fighting campaign. So, interesting. Be curious to see if, and I guess when this phenomenon might hit the U.S. We don't often can. In fact, I can't remember a time when you know, major banks literally pulled all mortgages off the table, even for a short period of time. Maybe it happened back in 2008. I just don't recall that.
Well, you know, now it's time for your Levity is Golden. And are we going to talk about politics as usual?
I'm afraid so. I couldn't find
anything
else. Well, what's new is, you know, the more things change, the more they remain the same, right? Jeez. For some say, anyway, they tried to hold the government's credit rating hostage by railing against an increase in the nation's, $31.4 trillion debt ceiling. And yesterday, they decided to rail against conducting any business in the People's House. That's with the capital H. House Representative essentially went into freeze frame yesterday, continuing today with members of the House Freedom Caucus vowing to hold the floor out of frustration with House Speaker Kevin McCarthy. Representative Dan Bishop of North Carolina said Kevin blew up the unity of the Republican conference last week on the debt ceiling deal by agreeing with President Biden on a deal that they are not happy at all with. 11 Republicans on Tuesday, including Bishop, voted against a procedural resolution that I think was called unanimous consent, bringing bills to the floor for discussion and vote. Again, the standoff continued yesterday. And by the end of the day, McCarthy's office canceled floor activity for the rest of the week. Now, the Freedom Caucus members are upset that the speaker compromised with President Biden last week on debt ceiling legislation to let the federal government continue to borrow money to pay for previously authorized spending. Republicans had proposed much steeper spending cuts and stricter work requirements for federal public assistance programs, and McCarthy had successfully steered a symbolic bill through the House with almost all Republicans on board. But the deal McCarthy struck with Biden contained only modest and much shorter term spending cuts and work requirements, disappointing the Freedom Caucus, and the bill actually ended up passing with more Democratic than Republican votes in the House. Matt Gaetz, a Florida congressman, said that leadership failed to hold the line, so he and his fellow conservatives would hold the floor, which means they would stand in the way of passing any legislation, even symbolic messaging bills about defending gas stoves, for example, from regulation. So whether votes would happen next week, it's not clear. McCarthy's team has not indicated how long this will continue. Anyway, long story short, Melody, McCarthy's still speaker. Whether or not this gets to a point where the Freedom Caucus uses the one quid pro quo in the deal that was made to make him speaker back in January, that is, just one person can call for a vote to remove him as speaker. We will see. They're not threatening to use that option yet.
Of course not. It's politics as usual.
It's politics as usual.
Yeah.
That is this week's Levity is Golden.
Yeah. You know, did you see where they had wanted Jamie Dimon to run for president? Did you see that?
Yes, I did.
I mean, it's like, are you kidding me?
God save the Republic.
I mean, who would actually get behind? Oh, I would think a lot of people would get behind that. But it's even a frightening thought that it would even be suggested.
Yeah, well, you know, it's most people don't do their homework. Most people wouldn't know that he's led the nation's largest bank by asset size over a decade, during which they've been, charged with five felonies, and which they've essentially been convicted. They've agreed to consent decrees and what have you, including having manipulated the precious metals market, the gold, silver market. So it's incredible to me that particularly people who do know more than the rest of us, or at least have insider information, would suggest that. I mean, you got to admit, though, Dimon comes across as a smooth-talking, knowledgeable kind of guy. So it's politics makes strange bedfellows.
Yes, it does. China, we're back to China. I wonder, now we have the world's second largest economy that, you know, of course, as I mentioned earlier in the program, they're struggling to shake off some of the lingering effects from being in lockdown for so long. And China is basically returning to a different world economy than the one that did exist before 2020 and the war in Ukraine. Both of these events prompted countries all around the world to reassess trade relationships and the risk of relying on rivals for core products. A lot of folks, a lot of analysts are saying, well, you know what, that's a problem for China, where domestic activity has been persistently weak. Industrial production, retail sales, and capital investments, they were all softer than had been expected in April, Dave.
Yeah, now new numbers out yesterday showed the economy isn't getting much help from exports, for sure. A traditional source of strength for the manufacturing giant in the world's second largest economy. In fact, exports declined there at 7.5% in May compared with the prior year. Certainly, the export figures reflect the ongoing strains between China and its major trading partners in the West. China's exports to the U.S., for example, were down 18% compared to May 2022. It was worse in Europe. Exports there fell 27%. On the other hand, not surprisingly, exports to Russia, which has become economically reliant on China since its invasion of Ukraine prompted the West to sanction much of its economy, more than doubled. China exports to Russia more than doubled. We live in interesting times.
We certainly do. We certainly do. Now, this is kind of interesting, which Congress, you know, shouldn't be doing this. They're just too lazy, I guess, to do it on their own. But they've been turning to the IRS to deliver social and economic benefits through the tax code rather than the traditional federal agencies. You know, and it's just, why are they doing, you know?
Because they can.
Because they can.
And because they can, you know, I guess they think there's plausible deniability when certain people get their noses out of joint.
They just have no accountability for what they do whatsoever. But, and as a result of that, the IRS now has now administers 21 refundable and non-refundable tax credits for individuals, such as the earned income tax credit, the child tax credit, plus roughly two dozen more tax breaks for corporations. Now, green energy tax credits that was enacted in the Inflation Reduction Act, which is the biggest joke of the century. When I look at this and read these articles, Dave, it's kind of like, you know, what planet are we even on? Because tax
only uh-huh. Rod Serling knows for sure.
I know. Because tax credits just don't have the same built-in accountability that typically accompanies formal spending programs. So, and of course, little is known. Maybe that's why they needed all of those new agents. But no one knows the effectiveness of these tax programs. The IRS data can tell us how many taxpayers claimed a tax credit and how much it reduced their tax liability, but can't tell us if the credit changed taxpayer behavior decision-making. The IRS is required to estimate the amount of improper payments of refundable tax program credits, tax credit programs. They don't know the amount. They just have to estimate.
Yeah, it might just be a matter of semantics. I mean, or because the numbers are so big, I think they perhaps couch it by saying, well, you know, this is an inexact science, so technically it's an estimate.
But you wouldn't think in today's, but supposedly they haven't upgraded their computers in ages, which I'm not quite sure about that. But you think with technology that they should be able to get to the penny, you'd think. But anyway, we have to when we do our taxes to the penny. But anyway, there was a new study by the Tax Foundation found that overpayments results from taxpayer errors, confusion, outright fraud have become common with these types of programs. Tax credits reduces a taxpayer's tax liability dollar for dollar, and refundable tax credits are paid out when a taxpayer's tax liability is reduced to zero. So in 2022, 27% of refundable tax credits were overpayments.
That's a lot.
Pardon?
That's a lot.
Yeah. The IRS paid out $98 billion in refundable tax credits to four programs. The earned income, additional child tax, American Opportunity. I'd like to know what that one is all about.
That's for qualified education expenses.
Okay. All right. And the net premium. What's that one for?
Obamacare.
It's well, funny how they change titles and everything so people really don't know what they're
doing. Well, I'll tell you, the Government Accountability Office and the IRS Inspector General estimate that of that $98 billion, 26 were overpayments. It's a lot of money.
Yes, it is. I hear the music. We're heading into a break. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival. Down and take a look at me. Come on, baby. Don't say baby. I gotta know if your sweet love is gonna save me. We may lose and we may win, but we will never be here again. So open up.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And one more time today, welcome back to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen. Melody taking care of other client businesses. Final segment. You know where to reach her. 1-800-375-4188. Stick around for this final segment. I'm going to be talking about Japan, wage gaps, India, and my favorite pet peeve these days, artificial intelligence. But first, let's talk about Japan, or more specifically, Japan's stock market. It turns out that Japan is back. Japan stocks are leaving other major markets across the globe in the dust so far this year, and it just isn't a market story either. Return of Japan to a leadership position among global markets after literally decades of being viewed as a dead end for capital is another reflection of how the pandemic, Ukraine, and the growing U.S.-China split are reshaping the world economy. The Nikkei has notched a 14% gain so far this year, clamoring to its highest closing level in nearly 33 years. Japanese benchmark now up 22%, trouncing the performance of other large markets. For example, Germany's MSCI is up 11.4%. France's CAC 40 is up 11.3%. Here in the U.S., the S&P 500 is up 11.2%. And Switzerland's SMI is next in line at 5.8%. Japanese stocks are getting a boost from a few separate but related shifts that add up to, well, a transformative moment for the world's third largest economy. First, after the better part of four decades, Japan has inflation again. Yes, as Melody mentioned the first segment, the governments consider inflation generally a good thing. Some, anyway. The country's economy had been stuck in a low-growth deflationary environment since it suffered that massive real estate and banking crisis back in the late 80s. Japanese companies have pricing power again now, helping push 2022 corporate profits to record highs. And with that profitability, policymakers see a chance to push through long-sought reforms to the country's sleeping corporate giants. For instance, this year, the Tokyo Stock Exchange has begun quietly pressuring some companies, particularly those trading below their price-to-book value, to boost cash return to shareholders or potentially face delisting. One big result of that? Buyback announcements, once modest in Japan, have soared. Well, I'll tell you, I think that's a most unfortunate consequence. The market's rise also mirrors growing tension between U.S., which is Japan's most important ally, China, its massive neighbor, especially after Russia's invasion, returned the issue of territorial conquest to the global stage. Companies in geopolitically sensitive sectors like defense and semiconductors have been major drivers of the rally this year. I mean, just look at Mitsubishi Heavy Industries and Tokyo Electron. And last but not least, foreign investors are also starting to pile in. Analysts say, and notably includes Warren Buffett, whose Berkshire Hathaway has boosted its key Japanese holdings recently. And too big to fail, Goldman Sachs analysts write that we've overall the mood on China was is more bearish as we have encountered over many years of such interactions. In contrast, interest in Japan was much higher than we typically find, especially with regard to the theme of corporate change. Well, you got the political ascension in 2013 of then Prime Minister Shinzo Abe and his economic revitalization program known as Abenomics, which generated a sizable market boost. Well, here's the bottom line. If the shifts in the global economy, including the return of inflation and growing tensions with China and its own corporate sector, prove durable, well, then China's next decade could look a lot different from its last few. Saturday marks the 60th anniversary of the Equal Pay Act, which prohibits employers from paying women less than men for the same work. Since the law originally passed, the wage gap between men and women has narrowed substantially, but not all the way. In 1963, the typical working woman, full-time, working full-time year-round, earned 59 cents for every dollar earned by a male counterpart. Last year, that number was 82 cents, according to government data. At the rate we're going, women working full-time year-round won't achieve pay parity with men until 2056, according to the Center for American Progress. And the projection, admittedly, is rosy. It would be unlikely for that trend to continue at that pace without major structural changes, at least according to Sarah Estep, the associate director of the Center's Women Initiative. Women working full-time year-round earned roughly 10,000 less than her male counterpart in 2021. Hey, look, before you send me email claiming that the pay gap is a myth, understand that women still earn less than men for a bunch of reasons, some outside the scope of the original law. A few factors: women overrepresented in lower paying occupations and underrepresented in the highest, best paying echelons of companies. And they're also more likely to take time out of the labor force or work part time to care for children or to take less demanding jobs. And all that moves their pay lower, sometimes for a lifetime. Hey, tell me what you think. Email me at daveallen.usa@yahoo.com. I'll read your comments on a future financial survival program. Now, let's move over to what will soon be the world's largest population, if in fact it isn't now, India, where companies making everything from baby toys to mobile phones, they're facing the proverbial catch-22. The more they try to produce goods in competition with China, the more dependent they become on their northern neighbor for components and raw materials. At least that's the key takeaway in a story today from Bloomberg News. Along with protectionist trade policies under Prime Minister Narendra Modi's Made in India push, the Indian government has introduced production-linked financial incentives for sectors like electronics and automobiles. $24 billion subsidy program apparently showing some success, with companies like Apple and Samsung expanding their footprint in the Indian market. And yet, even with those headline-grabbing wins, the jury's still out on whether India can even make a small dent in China's manufacturing dominance. Data show that India's imports from China have risen from less than $60 billion in 2014 to over $100 billion this year. At the same time, India's share of manufacturing has fallen from about 15% of its GDP in 2014 to around 13% today. Both numbers don't sit too well for India's desire for a bigger share of the world economy. Former Reserve Bank of Indiana Governor Raghuram Rajan says that such incentives are largely being used by companies that are assembling in India rather than actually making stuff. And that's leaving the nation even more dependent on imported components and raw materials. So as more countries try to cut their reliance on China, the reality is they still can't seem to break away from the world's factory floor. Hey, last week's What a Rush of Gold and Silver blog, which I authored, was called Beware the Jackal. Essentially argues that AI, artificial intelligence, will become the scourge of workers. But how worried are U.S. workers about losing their jobs to artificial intelligence? Well, turns out that the majority aren't, at least according to a new CNBC survey, Monkey Survey. But the data show that the answer to that question varies widely based on some key demographic factors. About one quarter of workers are worried that AI will make their jobs obsolete, but fears about AI job displacement run much higher among workers of color, younger workers, and lower salaried workers. Here are some of the numbers. Concern diminishes with age. 32% of workers 18 to 24 say they are worried, compared with just 14% of workers 65 and older. That's logical. The 19% of white workers worried is significantly less than the 32% of black workers, 35% of Hispanics, and 38% of Asian workers who say they're worried. 30% of workers making less than $50,000 are worried, compared with just 16% of those making over $150,000. Fully remote workers are much more apt than fully in-person workers, 54 versus 38%, to say their job is likely to change due to disruption from AI. It's a finding that corresponds to other survey data showing greater fears among remote workers about falling behind in careers as more workers do return to the office. While low-wage work has been perceived for a long time as a target of automation, the survey data by industry reveals that more recent concerns about knowledge worker displacement are also a big factor in the level of fear. Slightly more than half of workers in advertising and marketing and business support and logistics worried AI will soon take their jobs, twice the level of concern overall. And even with the majority of the workforce not worried, workers do expect their jobs to change as a result of AI. 43% say they expect their job to change significantly in the next 5 years due to such disruption. Now, AI experts have maintained that while there will inevitably be some job losses attributable to AI, the technology will offer as many opportunities as threats. Michael Choi, a partner in McKinsey Global Institute, says technology might automate a part of someone's job, and you might describe that as technology, therefore augmenting their job. It gives somebody superpowers. Because, for instance, if technology can write a first draft of a memo for you, I do more things than write memos. Well, there were reports at the Davos World Economic Forum in January that CEOs were using ChatGPT to write first drafts of their speeches. If this AI outcome plays out as forecasted, Chui says, individual workers will see productivity increases. Some of the first academic studies done on AI and productivity has shown large gains, in fact. But Choi said that when you do the math on AI and work, that handing over tasks to AI could influence staffing numbers. If a machine can do 15% of somebody's job and there are 100 people doing that job, a manager might ask, do I need 100 or 85 people? On the other hand, other managers could be saying, I want 100 people. And I want them all to be productive. So it all depends on where you're coming from. Let's hope there are more of the latter type of hiring manager in the future than those who think they can get the work done with 15% less people. Many experts say that workers should be experimenting with generative AI today to preserve their jobs, for example, with lawyers or teachers of the future being those who have adapted to AI use in their roles. All the way up to the most powerful jobs in the world, workers are experimenting with OpenAI's ChatGPT. Apple CEO Tim Cook said this week he's using the product. In fact, the survey found that C-level execs, 23% of them, and 27% of VPs are about twice as likely as individual contributors, 12% roughly, to say the topic of AI has been discussed a lot at their workplace. Well, look, this scourge is rising, ladies and gentlemen, but it doesn't have to eliminate millions, if not hundreds of millions of jobs, as some have estimated. But the rank and file workers of the world do have to be vigilant and demand that they have a seat at the table of planning, research, and development in this promising but oh-so potentially dangerous technology. And that, my friends, is all the time we have for today's program. I'll be back next Tuesday, Melody back tomorrow with Butch to close out the week. Also be on the lookout for our weekly blog in your email inboxes in the morning. Thanks, as always, to our oh-so-good production engineer, Todd Waite, and to you for tuning into Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Please be safe out there. Bye-bye. That's too bad. In my dreams, I have a plan. If I got me